welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 231 of the podcast, and it's 23rd of August 2015 as I record this. So today I have an interview with Honoré Korda about abundance for authors, creatively, financially, and abundance in life. So I do have a healthy dose of spiritual in my own life, and I believe in positive thinking and all that. But you know, this show is not woo-woo focused. It is very action focused. And Honoré is great because she definitely takes action. And she actually has a very interesting model around hiring out the back of her nonfiction books for billboards for local businesses. It's a great idea for nonfiction authors in particular. I can't find any way to spin it for fiction authors, but certainly this interview going into abundance and mindset will be interesting for everyone. So that is coming up next. Now, this week I have been, I'm still building the Creative Freedom course. It's a lot of work because it is sort of all-encompassing course about how to make a living with your writing. And I also recorded the roadmap video as part of the free video series, which is getting a lot of great comments. I've actually tried to encapsulate the entire author journey in a process flow because, of course, I used to be a business consultant, so process flows are the way that I think. And it will help people grasp all the aspects of the business. And I've actually been, you know, been thinking a lot about how to do this. And I'm really thrilled with it because I've taken what I started in business for authors and how to make a living with your writing, those books, and I've taken it much further into video and audio. So I'm really, I'm actually quite super proud of the course. It feels like something that is very important and is missing. I believe it's missing in the landscape of education for authors. So I know it won't be for everyone, as it's pretty advanced and only for those serious about making a living. But there is a free video series, so you can check that out at thecreativepen.com/freedom. And then you can at least have the free videos. And hopefully that will help. I'm certainly getting a lot of really interesting comments. Okay, so here's what you have sent me this week and what people are doing while they're listening to the show, which, our favourite segment. Aaron sent a lovely picture of his commute walking to work along Railway Lane in beautiful Gisborne, Aotearoa, New Zealand. So wonderful. I did a reply to Aaron and said, I have been to Gisborne. I was on a wine tour and can't remember much of it, but they have lovely country out east in New Zealand there. Mary Schaefer says, listening to the podcast in parking lot conditions on I-87 while transporting a newborn kitten to a rescue. Mary, you're like a superhero. Mike from Kingston in Canada. I love your podcast and all the helpful information. I typically listen to your sultry tones. I'm not sure I'm quite that sultry. During my Saturday morning long bike rides while I train for an Ironman. Good on you, Mike. Ironman is very impressive. And then Elizabeth, Elizabeth's Twitter handle has Elizabeth in it, so I know it's Elizabeth, but I'm going to try and pronounce Elizabeth's name in Czech. Alzbeta Pilarova. That's my attempt. Elizabeth says, yesterday I was listening to your podcast on my regular walk through a suburb in Prague. And Prague, of course, in the Czech Republic, wonderful place. And I want to write one of my one day books about Prague. So one day in Prague. I've been there, and in the winter it's magical. So I need an excuse to come back. Harley Christensen says she's learning so much from each podcast which she listens to while power walking. Fantastic, Harley. Patrick says, armed to do battle with weeds in Abiko, Japan, listening to the Guy Windsor episode. And there's a picture of him with his clippers about to head into the weeds. And always nice to hear another Japanese listener or listener in Japan. I get very excited when I hear about people who are outside sort of the US, UK. And here's another one. Sonia says, yay, found your podcast this week, listening from rainy Perth, Australia. And I think this is actually a really good point, is that Sonia has just found the podcast and we're on episode like 231. And this is what's so brilliant about podcasting and also books, is that people can find us at any time. And I think we get so obsessed with sort of in the moment what's happening right now that we forget that the things that we're doing will touch people years in the future. So if you're listening from the future, hello, which is it's so cool what we can do these days. And also just a little thing on Perth, because I'm starting to add personal anecdotes to our show. I learned to scuba dive in Frio or Fremantle, which is on the coast near Perth, and that's where I learned to dive before I headed off up north into Western Australia and camped out in the desert and travelled through Northern Territory, and that was a big adventure back in the year 2000. Billy Grogan, our chief, police chief, listening while driving in Atlanta traffic on the I-285. I think we're going to have like interstate bingo or something, where we have people who are on the various highways around the world. I think it'd be funny if we actually have people who are on the same highway listening. Derek says, listening to the podcast while waiting for surgery. I hope, Derek, given that this was on the 19th of August that you sent this, I hope you are now out of surgery and recovering and get well soon. And Joy says, doing the dishes while listening to your podcast. That is another one of those regular chores that I also listen to podcasts while doing dishes. SJ says, listening to your podcast today, finding it funny that I'm doing the exact opposite of your KDP select advice. And I did want to comment on this, because I know I give advice kind of in inverted commas, but what I really try and do is just share what I'm doing. So I never intend it to be prescriptive, as in you should do what I do. I just share what I'm doing. Now, I have said a number of times, I absolutely love KDP Select. I think it's brilliant. I think that people who are exclusive to KDP Select, I will totally admit that many of them are doing better financially than those of us who have gone wide. But what I think is so critical is that, again, I'm not obsessed with my income this month. I am obsessed with building a long-term business. And in my opinion, being on KDP Select is a short-term decision. And I think that to build a long-term business, you really need to be on all the stores. Now, I know that a lot of people are not building a long-term business, so that's completely fine. But for me, building customer base on iBooks and Kobo, which takes years, it is not something that can happen quickly as it can on Amazon using KDP Select. So for me, the reason I'm building iBooks and Kobo is for my long-term gain. So I guess, you know, we'll see what happens. I realize that Hugh Howey and Joe Comrath have been sort of broadcasting how amazing KDP Select is at the moment. And I have heard from people who have made really good money this month with the new terms of service. But what I would also remind people is, remember what happened last year, which is, once again, everyone was shouting about how marvelous KDP Select was in July. And then by November, people were talking about the KU apocalypse. So we shall see what happens. I do have books in KDP Select. I have my career change book. I have my translations. I'm certainly not writing something for KDP Select in the future. I also have my books on Scribd and Oyster. So I think that subscription models are really important. But equally, the reason I choose to go wide is for that long-term business. So I hope that makes sense, SJ, and anyone else who is wondering what to do with KDP Select. As ever, if you have books with no series, or, you know, so lots of standalones, or if you have under three books or three books or fewer in a series, then yes, perhaps KDP Select will be better for you. In fact, it probably will be better for you. But I absolutely personally, you know, find that building my income through Kobo and iBooks is very satisfying, and I like to reach different customers. So it is a personal choice. And I was actually talking about this with my husband, because we've been building this course and the how to build a course these days. And I will talk about this. I'll do a blog post on it later. But, you know, there's so many choices now for doing courses. And we've had to sort of sift through all these different ways of what is the best way for people to do an online course. And we came down to the fact that it's better to have less choice than more choice sometimes, because it can be quite overwhelming. So yeah, back into, oh, last one. Sam Finden says, I listen while cutting hay in the middle of a Merle Haggard song in Montana. And Sam, that's awesome. And it's funny, cutting hay in my head, there's been a TV series called Poldark, based on the Poldark books in the UK. And there's been a notorious scene where handsome Ross cuts hay with a scythe with his top off. And it's become quite famous in British, sort of in the British consciousness now. So I hope you'll appreciate that that's what I'm thinking of while we have cutting hay. And okay, so that is a suitable point at which to leave our segment and say, what are you doing while listening to the show? Or has a particular podcast spurred you into action? Or is there anything that particularly stands out to you about what you enjoy about the show? Please do tweet me at The Creative Pen on Twitter, or email me joanna@thecreativepen.com and let me know. Okay, so this podcast episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I will play a message from them in a minute about a new initiative that supports local bookstores, which we will all appreciate. I think that's always a good thing. And this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. And I have been bowled over by the number of new subscribers recently on Patreon. I really appreciate it, and it makes me feel like this group is sort of far more engaged than it used to be. So thank you so much for that, and I wonder if it's me moving to a weekly show or what, but thank you so much. And thanks especially to new patrons, Alicia Robinson from Love God and Tattoos, which is very cool branding, and the lovely Ruth Ann Nordin, who was one of my first online indie author friends back in 2009 and is now supporting the show, Harley Christensen and Wendy Ledger. And I really do appreciate the Patreon support. So thank you so much. And if you'd like to support the show on Patreon, you can support me with just a few dollars, even just a dollar a show, to a maximum of 2 shows a month, less than a coffee a month. You can support the show at patreon.com/thecreativepen, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thank you so much.
Hey, Creative Pen listeners, I'm Christine Monroe from Kobo Writing Life. Did you know that Kobo is the digital reading partner for independent bookstores across the US? When a customer signs up for a Kobo account affiliated with a local store, that bookstore receives a percentage of every ebook and device the customer buys going forward. They don't need to have a Kobo e-reader to take advantage of this program. They can just download the free Kobo app on any smartphone, tablet, or PC. This partnership also offers a unique distribution opportunity for indie authors, whose books automatically land on the virtual shelves of indie bookstores whenever they publish with Kobo. To encourage more people to give digital reading a try, we decided to launch eRead Local. Between August 22nd and November 29th, for every new US customer that signs up for a bookstore-affiliated account, we will give that customer a $5 credit towards their first purchase and $5 to the bookstore. As an added bonus, bookstores will be eligible for great prizes like Kobo e-readers and a grand prize of a Kobo-sponsored event featuring a best-selling author. We need your help to spread the word. Tweet about it with the hashtag eReadLocal. You can also find ready-made tweets and cool badges at our blog, KoboWritingLife.com. For full details or to sign up for a Kobo account that supports an independent bookstore, go to Kobo.com/eReadLocal. We really appreciate your support.
And today I'm here with Honoré Korda. Hi, Honoré.
Hi.
Hi, it's good to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Honoré is an author, speaker, executive coach, and entrepreneur. Her latest book is Prosperity for Writers, a writer's guide to creating abundance, which is something we all clearly want. So just to get started, just tell us a bit more. I know, I mean, you're an author, entrepreneur, you do amazing things, but tell us a bit about the various aspects of your business and how you got into all this.
Sure. So I do three main things. I do executive and business coaching. So I work with senior level professionals and entrepreneurs to help them, and this is my tagline, double their income and triple their time off, because that's what everybody wants, time, more money and a lot more time. And then I do keynote presentations, speaking, and also corporate training, like all day corporate training. And then I write books, lots and lots of books. Kind of like you, only not like you. Not yet.
Well, what's interesting is you do so much more nonfiction. So just give us an overview of all your nonfiction stuff.
Sure. So my first book from 2004, I self-published for the first time in 2004, way before it was the cool, smart thing to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or at least I was not cool. I had a little letter on my chest, right? Scarlet letter that said self-published author. And then I wrote The Successful Single Mom a few years later, and that turned into a 6-book series. And then I wrote The Successful Single Dad, which is a fun story we might talk about later. And then I wrote Vision to Reality and Business Dating, which are a couple more business books. And then I was inspired to write, before Prosperity for Writers, I wrote a book called If Divorce is a Game, These Are the Rules. And it's about taking a proactive, positive approach to one of the worst times in a person's life.
Wow. So yeah, divorce, single parent stuff. We're going to come back to productivity, but you know, I think it's interesting how you've managed to do that with all of that going on. But I'm also interested. So you just talk a bit about your funnel, because, you know, as an entrepreneur and I, you know, this is about abundance. One of the biggest things we see with nonfiction authors is it is not just about the book. So can you just explain the pathway through your various products and services based on the book first?
Sure. So a book is a business card. And that's what Mark Victor Hansen said when he said, what do you do? And I very proudly said, oh, I'm a coach and a speaker. And he was like, oh, honey, everybody's a coach and a speaker. He was like, you need a book. And I was like, oh, right. And I didn't go to college. I'd never taken a writing class. So I have a really sarcastic sense of humor. So I basically was thinking to myself, oh, how hard could that be? What could go wrong? Right. I'll just write a book. No problem. And of course, little did I know, right, all that goes into that. So I use my book as a business card, as a calling card, but it gets people to have a peek behind the curtain as to what they could get if they were to pay me for an hour or for a keynote or for several days of training, right? It kind of puts people through the process. And a book is really a nice way for someone to see if they resonate with you. And so I can give them out like candy and get people to go to my website and have conversations. And it has still, being an author still has the prestige or the, what's the word I'm looking for? The someone to think that you are good at what you do.
Prestige is a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, there's just a noise. Is your hair or your necklace rubbing against the microphone on your...
Maybe.
What? It's just like a,
this maybe, is it gone? If I talk, I have other headphones.
Yeah. I think
I'm going to change.
No, it's fine. I think it was that necklace. Is that okay. Got something in it? Is that, cause it sounded like a metallic kind of rustling.
Yeah. It's actually a string.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, anyway, but, I think that's better. Sorry.
Okay. That's all right.
We'll carry on. No, that's really interesting. I mean, do you have any sense, like, cause I know some people listening, the Steve Scott model, and Steve Scott's been on the show, which is make all your money from actual sales of eBooks. Would you have any kind of clue as to what percentage of income just comes from books alone? Or is it purely that your income is, you know, it's the book is a marketing aspect for you?
Well, actually, I have several different ways that I make money from my books, so I can talk about that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So I have a publishing company. So I have Honoré Enterprises, which is my coaching and my speaking business. But then I have Honoré Enterprises Publishing, which houses all of my intellectual property. So my books become courses. And in particular, so I can talk a little bit about how the Successful Single Dad came to be. I was actually at a luncheon with a big time divorce attorney here in Texas. And he said, I want to buy 10,000 copies of the Successful Single Mom book. And one of the ways that I sell my books is I let companies and firms do what I call vanity printing, but it's really custom printing, where they take the back cover and make it a brochure about their business. So if you go into a bookstore, you flip over a book to see that Joanna Penn read it and said it was good, so it must be in the description of the book. But if the book is a gift, then the back of the book can be about the giver. So it's really a marketing tool for law firms and certified divorce financial advisors, those types of people. So they'll buy the book in quantity and put their information on the back. So I'm at this luncheon and he says to me, well, I'm just wondering when the Successful Single Dad is coming out, because we don't just divorce women, we divorce men. And I was there with one of his partners who was a friend of mine and my then COO. And I said, 2 weeks. And she kicked me under the table. You know, and I said, you know what? No problem. It's almost done, actually. And so I was able to pull that off, and the Successful Single Dad was born. And that's actually one of the reasons that I wrote If Divorce is a Game, These Are the Rules, because I had single moms and I had single dads, but there were a whole bunch of people that divorced without children, so they would never look at my books. And I would have people say, I'm not even a mom or a dad or a divorced person. And I read the book because my sister was, you know, a single mom or whatever. And so I think there should be another book. And so that's why I wrote If Divorce is a Game, These Are the Rules. But it's been very easy to sell that custom printing to divorce attorneys, because they use it when someone comes to say, well, I'm shopping around and I'm looking for different divorce attorneys. And they'll say, well, I care about you. Here's my book that, you know, with my information on the back. And by the way, this is my philosophy on divorce, as well as this author. So it's actually a very large percentage of my income. And just online sales are a small percentage of that bigger percentage. So I have multiple streams of book income. I think it does help me to get a bigger fee for speaking. I think it does help me to command a higher fee as an executive and business coach. Mm-hmm. I think that all of them work together, right? They're in, and Mark Victor Hansen was really right. You can be a coach or you could be a coach and a speaker, but when you add that author piece to it, it gives you credibility and prestige.
Yeah. So just to be clear for people, because I think it might be confusing people. So you've written one book, well, you've written several books, but let's take the, you know, a single dad book, and the book stays the same, but you change the cover to be a different divorce attorney. They haven't paid you for the book. They've paid you for the printing of the book and you've kept all the rights. And then you just go to the next attorney and change the cover to say their name. Is that right?
It's the back cover only. So everything stays the same, the front, the, and the spine and the inside. I don't let them change anything, because you know what a pain that can be. But my designer, I have a really cracked, fantastic designer, and I charge them to do that vanity custom piece where they send me their logo and their photo and all their wording, and he makes it look pretty. And then we send a cover to them to say, this is what the cover will look like. Do you approve it? And they say yes. And then I, you know, upload it to my printer, and I have a deal with my printer now. They're used to it. They're like, okay, how many do you want? And I don't ever see them. They send me the overruns. So I have examples of it to show other people, but the books go direct to the law firm. So I don't even ever do anything other than have my assistant confirm that they've received the books and that the, you know, the check cleared.
Amazing. I really love that. I think it's just super. And a surprising thing that people don't even think about is that kind of, it's almost renting like a billboard space.
Right.
Isn't it? Anyway, right. I've probably gone too far down that. So, I mean, those are a few things about making money with books. I'm also interested in asking about your coaching business, because, you know, like you said, so many people are coaches, but so few people make money from coaching.
My hourly rate is $1,000. So I kind of work with the top echelon of people, or people who want to be in the top echelon and are willing to pay for the strategy and the accountability that I provide. And a business, I have a business mind, I'm a business owner. So I think there are a lot of, you know, air quotes coaches out there that don't provide results. And so I provide results, and I have hard evidence and fans, people that have worked with me for years that will refer new business to me. So now I don't really look for business. And when someone wants to hire me, I actually vet them, which is different than please hire me. Right. It's a mindset. It's not an arrogance or anything like that. It's more when someone wants to work with me, I always say I have 100% success rate. I'm not going to let you screw it up. So tell me why you're committed to this process and what is it that you want? Because if I'm not the right coach for you, then I'm going to help you find the right coach.
So yeah. Basically what you're saying is I think many coaches and many authors just have this kind of pick me sort of approach, whereas you're doing it the opposite way around and kind of vetting people before they come to you. And what I'm getting a sense of there is confidence. I think so many authors have a lack of confidence and I you know, the things you've said, I'm like, wow, she's really confident to ask, you know, to say, okay, well, why don't we do custom printing, or, you know, are you ready to be my client? So where does that confidence come from for you?
Years of work on my self-confidence, for sure. I mean, I started it where zero confidence was the goal. I didn't want to have confidence. I just didn't want to have a lack of confidence. And I worked on myself. I've been a lifelong personal development student, and that's where it comes from. But to kind of carry on with this piece, what you were talking about is when I wrote the book Business Dating, I was relating personal relationship development with developing relationships in business or networking. And I think people network very poorly. And so I was relating the difference. And when I talk about, you know, when a woman meets a cute guy and she really wants the guy to like her, it's the pick me, pick me, pick me. And it's like, wait a minute, why am I going to give up my singlehood for you? Why are you fabulous? And really doing their due diligence. So it's just a slight shift in I'm valuable. And I think if you have a life, if you have breath, then you have value. And I think it's just owning that value and being willing to stand up and say, I have value. I bring something to the table. What do you bring to the table? Is this a symbiotic, synergistic relationship? Can we benefit from each other? Mm. And so when you are an author and you've written the words down, you want to find the people that can't wait for your next book and cherish your work and encourage you. And I released the book yesterday, and I had a whole bunch of people come to my Facebook party. It was so funny. I had 5 people say, I can't come to your party. And I was like, it's virtual. You can come anytime you want. It's like the whole day. Right.
Oh, no, that is really cool. It's funny with we might come back to marketing, but just on the book then, because some people, again, I mean, we've talked a bit there about confidence. Some people are going to be uncomfortable with the words prosperity and abundance and as it applies to books. You know, for example, I shared recently about my own 6-figure income, you know, through writing, and got quite a lot of flack for that.
You did.
If people are having a problem with the words prosperity and abundance, what are the things that people can do to get over that mindset and to change their mindset that you obviously cover in the book, but give us some tips.
Sure. So I don't know how you become comfortable with a word. That's an interesting question. But I can say that you can become comfortable with making money by changing your beliefs around money. And so one of the things that I suggest that writers do is to start to claim the fact that they're a writer. It took me a really long time to say, I am an author. As a matter of fact, I would say, I'm a coach and a speaker. And my COO would say, and she writes books. And they would say, you write books? And of course, it's a kind of a cool thing, right? And I would say, oh, I write books. But, you know, I didn't go to college. I have a writing class. I just write these books. And she's like, hi, you should lead with that. Right? That's a big deal. Mm. Oh, okay. So it took me a while to have that mental shift to be okay with leading with, I am a writer, I am making money with writing. But it was interesting that the minute that that was the case, then it started to come, right? Mm. So first comes the mindset shift. So I have them write 3 sentences as one of the activities in the book. One of the action items in the book is to write, I am a writer. And then I write blank. So I write nonfiction for business people who want to increase their income and their time off, right? Have less stress and more abundance. And you say, I make an abundance of money writing nonfiction for business people who want to double their income and triple their time off, right? So you craft your sentences, and those are the things that you say. And if you say something enough, It's called an affirmation, and some people have, you know, weirdness around affirmations, but you're affirming something every time you say something, whether it's positive or negative. So if you say, I don't have time to write, that's an affirmation. You're affirming to yourself and your subconscious mind that you don't have time to write. But if you say, I'm a writer and I write horror stories for people who like to stay awake all night, read horror, right? then you start to develop that belief in yourself and in your writing, and then you will write because your subconscious mind will be programmed, and then you will be writing. It'll be automatic because when you believe something, it's automatic, right?
Yeah, and I used affirmations myself to, you know, I used to say, I am creative, I am an author, like way back in 2005, 2006, before I was either of those things or before I believed I was those things. You know, I didn't believe I was creative until I said I am creative. So, yeah, I think, so anything else on changing mindset? Do you think the writing down and the saying things out loud, these are very important aspects for people?
Well, yeah. So one other fun thing that I say in the book, and so I also did a course. I did the Prosperity for Writers course to prove the concept, right? Because I never like to write a book on something until I've actually proven a concept. And so I did this class. I found some writers and I said, okay, I have this idea for a book and we're going to do a class. And so I threw them into this 4-week class. And I said, the first thing you're going to do is BOLO. So BOLO stands for be on the lookout. So if you've watched any crime drama ever, there's a detective standing over a dead body and they'll say, the suspect is 5'11 and he's wearing a blue baseball cap and a leather jacket and he went that way. And they'll say, put out a BOLO on the suspect, which means be on the lookout. Mm. So I decided to repurpose that and to BOLO for two things. One is everywhere there is abundance, where there's evidence of abundance. So just look for anything you see in abundance, whether it's a gold Rolls Royce or black Mercedes or trees or rain or whatever, or kids crying on the subway or the tube, right? Like you're going to see an abundance of different things. And I want you to make note of that, right? Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is to make note of to BOLO for people who are making money from their writing because they're everywhere. You can go on K-boards or in groups on Facebook or listen to your podcast. I mean, you have person after person after person who makes money from their writing, and it's just evidence that it's possible. And if it's possible for someone, it's possible for you to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And when you do look out for those people, you see them everywhere. And I think that, but that also makes it difficult for authors. I always think it's funny. Authors are like, oh, but, you know, everyone's a writer. And that's actually it's not true. But when you're on the lookout for writers and you meet writers, you suddenly your whole world is filled by writers. And then you start to feel like there's so many people. How can you stand out? But the point is, actually, very few people are writers, aren't they, at the end of the day?
Correct. And there are I've seen everything from 8 billion to 11 billion people on the planet. And like only a very small percentage of people are even aspiring writers. And even a smaller percentage of those people are writers. And one of the things that I say in the book is that if you don't think anybody wants to read your writing, it's like out of 11 billion people, there's enough. There's enough to keep you fed. You just have to find them. And here's the part that isn't the prosperity piece that is metaphysical. Here's the prosperity piece that's practical. It's like you have to sit down and write the words, and then you have to do all the other stuff too. You've got to create a list, and you have to create relationships with your readers, and you have to put in the work. If you don't think it and believe it, and then you don't believe you deserve it, and you don't commit to the process, right? Those are my four steps. If you don't do those, then you won't execute on anything, because if you don't think it's ever going to happen, then why would you take the time away from spending time with your friends or your family or watching something on the television or reading a good book? Why would you take time away from something to pursue an activity that's not ever going to pay off? So the mental piece is really the most important piece, and it comes at the head of the line. Like you've got to start there, and then you've got to put the plans in place and put your production schedule, you know, up on the board or write it down, and then say, okay, every day I'm going to work on this. I'm going to find 5 people to join my list every day, and it's only going to be 5 people, but 10 years from now, what's 5 people a day for 10 years? I don't know what it is. I can't do math in my head, but it's a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the I think what the problem that happened with that whole law of attraction era that we had, you know, a while back, that, you know, you mentioned Mark Victor Hansen, The Secret, and I read that and everyone got into it. And there's a lot that's good and right about the law of attraction. But I think what people forgot is it's not just about the mindset. And what I like about what you're saying, right, and what you're teaching and also what you're living and what I live is, yes, you need the positive mindset. But if but the action in attraction is not what you're saying. That's the thing that, yes, I mean, you can't do this without doing the blooming work. I mean, that's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
Right. And it takes longer and it's more effort than you ever thought. And there are bumps and challenges. And I always say whenever I commit to something, the universe giggles and then throws up a block to see if I'm really serious about it. And then I will overcome it, right? My goal was 5 years ago, 5 years ago next month, was to make more money from my leveraged income, right? Mm. Courses and books and things that I hadn't even thought of yet. And I didn't know what all of those were. I just was looking for those opportunities to replace my, I spend an hour, I get $1,000, right? Which is not bad money by any stretch of the imagination, but I would like time freedom as well as money freedom, right? So that was my goal. And so I put in a whole lot of time and put in a whole lot of effort in order to make that happen. And I had no idea all of the things that were going to come up and literally stand in my way and make me recommit on a regular basis to that outcome.
Mm. Well, there were two things there. So yeah, you talked about leverage. I use the word scalable. And I think that, you know, this is one of the things we do, the intellectual property assets. They are just ultimately scalable, right? They can make money for us for the rest of our lives and 70 years after we die. And you've got a child, right?
I have a 15-year-old daughter, yes. Yeah,
so basically you have that, you know, you have heirs and successors who will reap rewards from your intellectual property assets. But as you say, coaching is one of those things that is not scalable. Keynote speaking, not scalable. Correct. So I think, I mean, it's important to have a balance of both of those things, though, because you need the cash flow that's the higher spike. Is there anything else on that kind of leverage or scalability that's important, do you think, for people?
That they need to do it over and over and over again. That you don't write one book, right? I'm sure this is a horse that we've beaten nearly to death. But when someone says, I have one book, now what? I will say, go ahead and publish that book and let it find some readers for you. But then that's why I wrote the Successful Single Mom book series, because I don't write fiction yet. It's on my list of things to do in my free time. But that's why I wrote the series, because I looked at what are the most successful authors doing, and they were writing a series. And so then I decided to tackle each problem that a single mom had, and I wrote a book for each one of those problems. And so I don't have one book that sells. I have six in that series. And then the keynote speaking and the coaching are ways for me to meet new people that then buy my books, right? Mm-hmm. Or buy my audio coaching program, as opposed to buy me, my time. Because the audio coaching program was a spend one amount of time in doing it, and it's recurring revenue. So it's thinking about what are the ways that you can repurpose everything that you do.
So you also have this great FAME acronym. Maybe you could explain what that is and what it's made up of, because that's the sort of more practical side.
Yeah, so FAME isn't what you think, right? It really is an acronym. It's like you can get fame. You could become a famous author, but that's, I don't think, the point. I think most of us would choose just money over fame, right? We like definitely to go to the bathroom and eat dinner in peace. So in a restaurant, right, I would rather just not anyone know who I am so I can enjoy my dinner. But, you know, if you get it, then that's a blessing too in some ways. So anyway, FAME stands for, and there are multiple
things per letter,
but we'll go with focus for the F in FAME. The first F is focus. And it really is, once you've defined what it is that you need to do, so whether it's write for an hour a day or 500 words a day or whatever that looks like for you, then you actually have to focus. You've got to turn off the Facebook. You've got to turn off the phone.
F is not for Facebook.
Yes, F is for turn off Facebook and focus. That's what F is for, right? And then A is attitude. And so this is where we think, well, there's the prosperity side of prosperous writers, right? And then there's the practical side. Well, this is really both. This really straddles the fence, right? Because attitude, if you have the attitude, well, it's never going to work out anyway, then it's not working in your favor. So it behooves you to believe, even if it's an irrational belief, right? I think we have to have an almost irrational belief that, well, of course it's going to work out because I'm putting all this effort into it. By gosh and by golly, it better work out because I'm doing all this stuff. And so you have to have a positive mental attitude and you have to work every single day to make sure that you're putting good stuff in. Mm-hmm. So listen to podcasts, listen to positive books, read books on book marketing and list development and all those things. Put all the good stuff in because good stuff is going to come out. Mm. So then M is for money consciousness. And I say that prosperous writers are really okay with money. They know how much money's coming in. Mm. They have a name for every dollar. So is this a dollar I'm going to invest? Is this a dollar I'm going to save? Is this a dollar I'm going to spend? How am I going to grow my money? They just get really comfortable with money terms. They're not afraid to look at their money. They're not afraid to know how much money they have. They do projections. I mean, don't you have projections? I have projections.
Yeah. And cash flow forecast. And I love like doing my bookkeeping and the whole thing.
Yeah, well, okay, now you lost me. I do not love the bookkeeping. I have a bookkeeper who loves the bookkeeping. So this is my tip. Hire someone who's a nerd for that stuff because they get into the spreadsheets. I have a spreadsheet and every month I put in, this is how much I made from each thing. And then I'm able to forecast and project. And that's kind of fun. It's good to keep track of where you came from. Mm. Right. And just get really comfortable with the fact that you're worthy, your words are worthy, and that you should do well from doing good, that you should write the words and make money from it.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, just before you go on, the money, that money consciousness, so many people feel like negative about the money. And, you know, so many authors, I just don't know why there's such negativity. And maybe it's the author in a garret sort of myth, the myth of the poor starving artist, which doesn't, of course, have to be true. And like, you know, again, J.K. Rowling, you know, she's done so much good. Yeah. With her money. We've just seen like the richest people in the world, like Warren Buffett, you know, have given away all their money. You can do so much more good with more money. It's not just about buying a TV or whatever, which, you know, let's face it, it's not interesting.
Who has time to do that?
Yeah, exactly.
Who has time to watch television? We're writing.
Yeah. So I think that abundance, you know, that abundance thing, like there are more than enough readers for everyone. There's more than enough sales for everyone. In fact, I find the more I write, the more I read. I buy books. I buy more books now as an author than I ever did. So the more writers we have in the world, the more readers we're going to have in the world. So yeah. Anyway, so that was M, right?
That was M. And I say that if my Kindle was real, my books would stretch to the moon. Like, right? thank goodness it's digital. It's file space.
Yeah.
I'd be killing way too many trees. Okay. So finally, the E is execute. And so this is that next piece of I have a production plan. And these are the books that I want to write. And this is how long I think it's going to write those books. And if you have the Steve Scott model, and I have the same one, it's like I have the book that's in my brain, I have the book I'm working on, and the book that I just finished that's in final production stages. Mm. So even as I released a book, I also finished a manuscript on the same day because it's like the next book goes into the
production plan.
Into the production, right? So you have to have the production plan, but then I also then have a 100-day plan that readers can download because I work in 100-day cycles. It's easier to wrap your brain around 100 days because a month is too short and a year really is a long time. You think, oh, I can write 6 books in a year or 1 book in a year, 2 books in a year, and yet it seems so long. Like if I have a whole year to write a book, it's like I'm going to the beach.
Yes. Right?
I don't have I don't have urgency around it. So putting together a 100-day plan and saying, what am I working on? And then, you know, the E is for execution. Like you've got to actually do it. So that's where you go back to the focus piece. Like, what am I going to do today? So my commitment to my book business is every day I write for 20 minutes and my goal is 1,000 words. And I read from 2K to 10K and I read Monica Lionel's Write Better Faster.
Yeah,
and
so I thought, me too.
You know, Dragon Dictate, right? This is the part where you're putting the good stuff in because there are lots of authors out there that are like, here's the good stuff. Here are the goods. Here's what I do. Here, let me make your way easier, right? And so I got Dragon Dictate and I trained the dragon.
Well done. So,
now I find it great. I do Dragon for almost everything, like on my phone and, and my email and everything. Like once you train the Dragon, and I certainly type fast. I type about 120 words a minute, but I think I talk like 5,000 words a minute sometimes. And so I think it's important to use tools, but to have those plans and say, I'm going to commit to what's the thing that I'm going to commit to every day? Because it's easy to come up with this big, glorious plan. And then you're so overwhelmed by what you have to do that you don't do anything. And so then it's breaking it down to what are my action steps today? What is it that I have to do today? Oh, well, I have to write some words today. Mm-hmm. And then I have to go and edit some of the words that I did yesterday or on the other project that I'm working on. And then I probably should get on social media and be social. Not just media, right? So all of that plays into being successful. But here's the thing, like, what's the alternative?
The day job.
I do not know these words. What are these words you say?
I actually want to ask you about Dragon. So I've read those books too, and I'm like, okay, great, let's do that. And I just got so mad with the whole Dragon thing, and it just, I mean, I've got a nice British accent. Why is my accent a problem? Like, and I've got a friend, Orna, who's Irish, and hers is completely fine, you know, and she's got an Irish accent, and I'm like, I speak the Queen's English. What's going on?
Yes, what's the matter? I have the nicest voice ever.
Yeah, why is this cocked up?
It's practice. Literally, the more you do it, the more somehow the system magically knows who you are. And so it's not what you want to be productive at first.
Yeah.
Like I just sat there and talked for hours. Like I did the suggested, because it has like three or four suggested exercises. I just did those over and over again for several hours. And then I was really patient with it at first. Like I had an expectation going in that one of us was going to die and I didn't want it to be me.
Okay. So how many hours of talking before it started to get it right?
A couple of hours, not that long, two or three hours. I went through each of the exercises at least twice. Mm. And then I was really patient with the Dragon. And I had saved in my, like on my screen, like the shortcuts to where I could go see, because I would find that it wouldn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I just got so frustrated.
Yes. And so you just have to be patient with it, but I say just keep trying it. And so it is what it is, right? It just, it's lost.
Yeah. So, I think a bit of patience. I'm not a very patient person. But okay. So E was execution, right? So now we've executed, we've done that. I do want to ask you about productivity and managing time because, you know, like you said, you have a daughter, you've obviously been through divorce, I presume.
Yes.
Hence writing about it. You've been a single mom. And yet, you know, you said your daughter's 15 and you've been doing this since 2004. So you've been doing this with a young child as a single mom, presumably. So how did you manage your time when you had all these competing things going on?
Well, my funny time hack was to marry the right husband the second time. So I
you had to find time for dating as well as everything else.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So here's the thing is, so this is where my business coaching head comes in. And when I am working with people, one of the things I will tell them is to put together their schedule before the day happens. Mm. Never have a day in actuality that you don't have mentally and on paper first. Mm. So, and so a lot of people will come back with, well, coach, you know that I don't want to be that structured with my time. And I say, well, the structure actually sets you free. Like you decide how you want to spend your time and you're deciding how you want to spend your time based on the plans you created, right? So you're working backwards. You're saying, okay, well, I have to write 1,000 words. What time is that going to happen? Because it's like exercise. If you say, well, I'm just going to exercise sometime today, sometime never happens. That's never going to happen. So it goes on the calendar. So I get up at 4:30. I do a morning practice. Like I sit and I read and I go over my vision and I do, you know, exercise and those types of things. And so by 6:30, I'm in the shower. And by 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm ready for my day. And that's usually, thankfully, school starts next week. And I can actually have a real schedule. And so my daughter goes to school at 7:45. And so I know exactly what's happening from 7:45 until 4:30. So I have writing, I have editing, I have coaching, I have speaking. Sometimes I'm traveling out of town, but those are anomalies, right? And so for the most part, every single day, I know exactly what is happening in each hour of the day. And I don't leave blocks of time open for chance, although I do add buffer time because mm-hmm. things always take longer, right? There are delays. And if I was always scheduled down to the minute, then it would cause problems if I needed to be flexible. So I add in a little extra time if I have to drive somewhere. If I'm on the phone with someone, I add in a little extra time in case there are challenges of one kind or another, right? But it's really saying, you know, if I'm working from 7:45 until 4:30, what's happening for each one of those hours? And we do a lot of mental work. And I know you've talked about this because I've heard you that the more writing you do, the more mental work you do, the more tired you are. Mm-hmm. And so this is the part where sometimes it's 2 o'clock and I've got all my work done and everything on my calendar is done. And so I will pencil in nap time because I want to be a pleasant mom and wife, right? As opposed to I'm exhausted. It's 6:30. You know, if you could hear what was going on in my head, you would run, right? Not very productive.
Yeah.
For family.
Yeah. So if you get up at 4:30 a.m., what time do you go to bed?
9:30.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Seal, you're more scheduled than I am. And I must say, I 6 o'clock really for me, but you know, I like my 8 hours. So, you know, I go to bed about 9:30 and read for, you know, an hour often. Sure. So maybe I read in the morning, you know, in the evening and you do it in the morning, but I do the same as you, like I have in front of me, but it's very, quick. I just write, you know, Wednesday, this is what I'm doing. And then, you know, just a couple of things, what I'm doing. And then I do schedule times. Obviously, we had a time booked and all that.
Yes,
so I think scheduling is really important as well. So I'm glad you said that.
Can I call it scheduling from now on?
Yeah. Okay. What did you call it?
Schedule. That's schedule. Very American. I think I'm going to schedule everything.
And
that
I have a diary. So you don't have a diary, do you, in America?
Oh, I do now.
I'm going to start selling diaries to Americans.
Yes. I'm going to start scheduling everything and totally mess everyone up.
Awesome. So I wondered just what else is in the book that people should know about?
Oh, all kinds of good stuff. The other pieces of the FAME acronym, how to put together a plan, the different plans that they should have, and really how to, and this is the most critical piece, right? So we'll kind of circle back to that, is how do you identify a belief that does not serve you, and how do you eradicate it and replace it with a belief that does serve you, or beliefs. And believe me, it's like peeling back the layer of the onion, just like when you think you've slayed the dragon, right? There's going to be another belief that pops up. And I do get into money stories and how the money stories from our childhood and what our parents taught us about money and what we learned both, you know, explicitly and implicitly affects the decisions that we make and how to not only change your beliefs, but change your entire story around money and just get really comfortable with money. Because the minute you get comfortable with it and it's not this big, scary thing that you're afraid of or this thing that you hate and push away, once you get comfortable with it, then you'll get also simultaneously comfortable with yourself and writing the words and publishing the words and making money from your writing, and all of it kind of works together and there's less stress and more abundance and more happiness. And I don't think there's anything better.
Fantastic. So where can people find the book and you online?
So I am honorecorder.com, HonoreeCorder, and I'm giving away 2 chapters of the book. So honoreecorder.com/writers. Mm-hmm. And if they want to buy the book right now, I'm hanging out with bad boyfriend Amazon for 90 days. And so I'm...
And then it will be everywhere.
And then it will be everywhere. So it's in paper book and ebook on Amazon, and I'm getting the audiobook produced as well.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time, Honore. That was great.
Thank you so much, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.